And as you have been hearing so far during the program, we have been covering the Iowa debates. And during these debates, the candidates have spent a lot of time punting the issues back and forth. That leaves a finite amount of time for the media to deliver its analysis. So given how many debates there have been, how many there are to come, is it possible to give equal airtime to all of the candidates? That's the question that we're going to tackle now. And to do that, we have been joined by Bob Butler, a reporter for KCBS Radio in San Francisco, Adrian Walker, a reporter for the Boston Globe, and Adore Udoji, who is a co-host of WNYC PRI Morning Show, which is going to launch. It's a new show that is going to launch in the spring of next year. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me start with this. How can the media deliver responsible analysis in a finite amount of time without coming off as biased? Bob Butler.
Well, it's really difficult when you have so many people at a debate. I mean, when you've got four or five candidates there who all take all their amount of time, it's kind of difficult to explain what everybody is saying. That's why, for the most part, what the media tries to do is just give you what the front runners are saying. And for the Democrats, that would be Obama and Clinton. So, you know, it is very difficult to say, yeah, this is what this guy said, this is what this person said, this is what this person said, and have people come away really understanding what the issues are and what people actually did.
Well, to follow up on his point, Adrian, who then would you say is the candidate who has been most overlooked, and why do you think that happened?
Well, I think there's a whole second tier of candidates who have been overlooked for just that reason. You know, it makes it really hard for people like Joe Biden and Chris Dodd and people like that to get any real attention, because if you're just going to recapitulate what everybody said in a debate, that's all you're going to be able to do in a story. You're not going to be able to provide any analysis or context. So something has to give, and usually what gives is the thoughts and opinions of candidates who aren't perceived as frontrunners.
Adore, one of the things that we talked about first with Ron Elving earlier in the program and then with Ron Walters and Kathy as well was whether or not in yesterday's debate particularly, the Democrats were beginning to look a little weary, and the suggestion was made that they're not so weary, but the public is getting weary of having all of these debates. So my question to you is, how do you negotiate between delivering information to the public, such as these debates, without getting sick of the subject?
I think that's always a tough one, and I think the other two folks will agree with me. You talk about fatigue, whether it's Hurricane Katrina fatigue or debate fatigue. But one thing that I think there are two things to keep in mind here. One is whether you work for television, newspaper, or radio, we're really just providing headlines at this point. There is a new world, which is online. And for those who are looking for more information, they have this opportunity now to go to these websites, all of our organizations, where they tend to do things like list an entire transcript of the entire debate, so you can go in and take a look at a way that you hadn't necessarily been able to do, you know, 20, 30 years ago. But in terms of differentiating, I think that's tough because you have folks who are on the campaign trail and they're listening to these. I did this in 96. You listen to these speeches one right after another. You listen to these debates one right after another, and trying to make sure that you're being as clear as possible as to what your candidate is saying can get tough after a certain point. But just lastly, very quickly, I also think we have to remember that it's not as if it's the same audience that's watching all these debates in succession. There is generally, most people will argue, that new audiences come as we get closer to the time when they actually start casting ballots.
That's an interesting point, because I suppose those of us in the media are the ones that tend to watch all of them, and we sometimes get a little weary. Adore, I'm going to come back to you, especially since I mispronounced your name. My apologies for that.
Okay.
Here's the next story. The United States has been in the spotlight lately for its possible torture of detainees overseas, but what about here at home? The Chicago City Council postponed a $20 million cash settlement on Wednesday. Here's the background. Four men suing the department for and 20 officers who worked with the chief, the former chief of the police department, claiming that they were tortured into admitting to murders that they did not commit, all four men African-American. So, Adora, what caused the delay, if you know, when it appeared that the settlement had been reached?
Oh, I think these things are always really tricky, and just having, just being a lawyer that I am, confessions are highly controversial. They always have been. It's a sticking point for criminal defense attorneys because it's been shown over and over again. I mean, here in New York City, we have the example of the Central Park jogger who was raped and severely beaten many years ago, and it turned out that the young men, the young African-American men that were ultimately convicted of the crime had nothing to do with it, and it was based on this confession that ultimately was highly criticized as being absolutely coercive. It's tough, but it's good that the story is bringing light to an issue that's very, very real.
Well, Bob Butler, covering stories like this, especially when there's sensitivity involved, when there's race involved, when there's life and death involved, how difficult is it as a reporter to navigate through subject matter like this without taking sides, or at least without giving the appearance of having taken a side?
You know, one of the things I've always subscribed to is I just tell what people are saying. And if the people who are tortured say one thing, or you report that, and the police, you report that, and you let the public make up its own mind. I mean, you know, not to use the old cliche, but we report and you decide. You know, I've covered many stories in which, you know, I talk to the people who are the victims, and you really kind of feel for the people, but then you have to really, you can't get too bogged down in that because, you know, our job is to report the facts. And even though the facts may be horrendous, you can't get too close to it. Now, we're also human. There are stories I've covered before where I really did identify with the victims, whether it's a family of somebody who was killed, and you get a better understanding and you can become closer to the family. But when it comes time to put the story on the air, you still have to just report the facts.
Well, I wanted to come to you, Adrian, and ask you a question about this, too. But there's another topic, and I want to make sure that we have enough time to get to it. It involves Al Sharpton. So apologies to you about the Chicago story, but I'm going to move on to Al Sharpton and come to you first. Here's the story. The day after Christmas may find some of you packing up ornaments and other holiday decorations, but probably not the Reverend Al Sharpton. On the 26th of December, he will appear before a federal grand jury to try to clear his name in connection with alleged financial wrongdoing. Now, one question will be whether the Reverend committed tax fraud by mixing and meddling funds from his nonprofit National Action Network. 10 close associates of his have also been served subpoenas in connection with the allegations against Sharpton. So my question is this, Adrian. Sharpton has survived prior run-ins with the feds over his taxes. How is this different, and what impact do you think this investigation might have on his, shall we say, standing in the community?
Well, Reverend Sharpton, as usual, has had the best response to this, which is to say, I can't remember when I wasn't under investigation. You know, he has been investigated over and over, and I'm not going to attach a lot of significance to this until you really see what they've got. As far as I'm concerned at this point, it's just the federal government asking questions. We'll see where it goes.
Now, Dora, you said you have a legal background. I don't know if you ever were involved in criminal law or not, but if you were, can you talk about the timing of this, and from a legal standpoint, how significant is it when the government finally decides to take an action against someone?
I think Adrian's point is really well taken. I mean, there are certainly many, many Americans who are under investigation. What would interest me, what I'd be most curious about, is two things. One, what was the impetus for this particular investigation? Was there some sort of information that was brought to their attention? Was it the result of just your random auditing that goes on for many in the entire country? I'd really like some answers to that. And secondarily, just as Adrian said, the government is asking questions. And, you know, as for what comes out of it, it may be nothing, or, you know, they may take a step further. The second thing that's interesting is the fact that they've convened a grand jury for it, which would make me assume, I actually worked for the IRS briefly when I was in law school, which would assume to me that they feel like they've got some facts that support some sort of filing. What those are, obviously, is unclear because the federal investigators in general tend to be incredibly tight-lipped, whether you're talking about U.S. attorneys or the IRS or any of the other federal investigative arms.
I always assumed that when you went to the grand jury, it was because your case wasn't really tight and that the grand jury offered you, in some cases, cover to continue an investigation and to try to get testimony or evidence that could be used to bring an indictment.
usually it's the other way around. Usually you open a grand jury if you feel like you do have at least a prima facie case, which would be you have some basic facts that would that create this probable cause that you have violated the law in some way.
Well, Bob Butler, how would you suspect that a case like this would be covered nationally? Obviously, Al Sharpton's name is one that conjures up all sorts of images, depending upon what your own personal point of view of him is. And yet, from the standpoint of the media, it's not clear necessarily to me how the story should be approached and how it might be approached differently, depending on, A, if you're white or black, B, if you're in the city, if you're in the different parts of the country.
Well, I think if you're a, quote, black reporter, and, you know, there are some people who identify that way, but most of the African-American reporters I know are reporters first and, you know, African-American second. You report the story the way that it is. He's being investigated for possibly commingling of funds, and you let it go. But like somebody else has said, I want to see what they come up with because, you know, Sharpton's been under investigation many times, you know, for many different things, and as have many other people by the IRS. So the government taking out a case against you is not necessarily doesn't necessarily mean that you are guilty of something. Now, how the media is going to report the case, I'm sure that there are some people who are, you know, gleeful that Sharpton is being investigated by the IRS, by the federal government, because there are some people that just don't like him just because he's Al Sharpton. There are other people that don't like him just because of the Tawana Brawley case, and there are many other reasons why folks don't like you. But, you know, when you're a person in the public eye, there are going to be plenty of people out there that don't like you. So how the media covers the story, you know, if you're one of those people that don't like him, well, I hope that you can be unbiased in the way you cover the story, whether you're black or white. But I don't know what's going to happen with that, but we'll find out soon. I guess the ironic thing to me is that, you know, like you mentioned in the beginning, that people usually they pack up their Christmas decorations the day after Christmas.
Right.
These folks are going to be packing up their documents to go to court the day after Christmas, which I think is really ironic.
Absolutely. This is a good place for us to stop. We have been talking with Bob Butler, who is a reporter for KCBS Radio in San Francisco, Adrian Walker, reporter for the Boston Globe, and Adora Udoji, co-host of the new WNYC PRI Morning Show, which is set to launch in spring of 2008. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day.